This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. It's 7:06 a.m. on Friday, the 1st of April. I'm Shazana Mokhtar, together with Kusu Chuang and Tan Chen Li. First, let's recap how global markets closed yesterday.
U.S. market, Dow and S&P 500 down 1.6%, Nasdaq down 1.5%, Asian markets, Nikkei down 0.3%, Hang Seng and STI down 1%, Shanghai Composite down 0.4%, FEM KLCI the only green, up 0.3%.
So a pretty red day across the board. Looking, I suppose, reacting to the pandemic bear market that's going on. But for some thoughts on where markets are headed, we have with us Carlos Casanova, senior economist at UBP. Carlos, good morning. Thanks for joining us today. Let's start with China, because China's purchasing managers indices showed both manufacturing and services activity contracting in March, missing estimates. So what's your outlook for China's GDP growth, especially since the government has made it clear it intends to continue with its COVID zero policy?
Mm-hmm. Yes, good morning. So we saw PMI numbers actually miss estimates this week, which is not entirely surprising if you think about it, given that the country has imposed lockdowns in a number of cities, which together account for a large chunk of GDP. We estimate around 20%. So that inevitably means that we will see a decline in activities in March data. And the balance overall, given that there was strength in January, February, should be positive in terms of GDP. But it means that we should see some downside risks to our 3.0% forecast for this year. And we can't, 3.0% forecast for this quarter. And we can't exclude the possibility of weakness into Q2 as well, given that, well, it's already April. So the situation will inevitably spill over onto the second quarter and impact activity then. Now, I have not changed my GDP forecast for 2022. I've kept at 5.0%. The reason for that is that China really has not missed a single GDP forecast ever, really. They only narrowly missed it by 0.1% in two occasions. They skipped it in 2020 due to COVID. So since they've already set a target of 5.5%, what we think that means is weaker activity in the first half, followed by a lot more stimulus in the second half of the year in order to meet that goal. But a lot will hinge upon what PBOC does next quarter, contradicting what everyone else in the region is, of course, doing. Mm. Yeah.
Okay, well, Carlos, I mean, it's been a tough start to the year. The first quarter was a bit of a non-starter, in fact. What's your sense of the second quarter in terms of the financial market outlook?
Mm-hmm. The first quarter has been very volatile. Usually, we will continue to experience volatility until, you know, the first few times the Fed hikes, and then the markets typically will price in a more visibility in terms of the Fed narrative, and so it should be better after that. Oh, sorry about that. We do expect, as a result, that this quarter is going to be quite volatile. You are going to see a series of economies in Asia hiking rates, and that's going to imply more movements around the currency, but also the equity markets. But from the second half, we should have better visibility from the Fed and support from China. So hopefully, Asian economies, which have exposure to both in terms of exports, should see some of the U.S. Demand hopefully being compensated by more China stimulus demand from the Chinese market, offsetting the hit on growth. So we do expect to see factors both to the downside and to the upside, but hopefully more stability in the second half.
Let's move the attention to Malaysia. Malaysia's Bank Negara has stated that it intends to accommodate monetary policy in accordance with our economic recovery. But is this a signal that they may be becoming more hawkish? And if so, how many rate hikes do you see this year for Malaysia?
I'm not sure if it's a signal that they're becoming more hawkish or not. But it's been our view that the BNM would likely hike rates in Q2. So they, to me, this suggests that they are positioning and getting ready to do so. We expect at least two rate hikes of 50 basis points this year. Most Asian economies will not follow the Fed in its rate hiking trajectory. Remember, we are currently expecting 6 to 7 rate hikes. And we can't even exclude the possibility of 1 to 2 50 basis point rate hikes by the Fed, possibly in May and also in June. That would be way too much for Malaysia or any Asian economy, in fact. But given the way things are going with the Fed, you know, if there is a 50 basis point rate hike in May, many Asian economies will have no choice but to implement a 25 basis point rate hike in Q2. And then, you know, we expect Malaysia to do another one as well shortly after. So that would mean 50 basis points. Main central banks in the region that will be hawkish are, of course, Malaysia, Philippines, Indonesia, and India, given the inflationary pressures, with Indonesia having a little bit more wiggle room than the others on the back of lower inflation, but also some of the, you know, Indonesia has some of the highest real rate differentials with the U.S. in the world right now, so they are benefiting from currency stability as a result as well. But unfortunately, everyone else will have to start hiking very soon.
Yeah, Carlos, you raised the Fed and the rate policy there, but the bond yields and the inversion of the long and short and end of the yield term, 10 years, indicate some kind of recession on the horizon. What's your view on that?
This is very interesting. So inevitably, every time there's an inversion, people talk about recession. And indeed, if you look back at history, since the 1970s, on 6 out of 7 occasions when the Fed curve inverted, and I'm talking about the 2 versus 10 year yield curve here, it ended up in a recession in the U.S. economy. But here's the caveat: that recession takes place on average 15 months after the yield curve inversion, or 1 to 2 years after yield curve inversion. So investors should not panic every time they see a yield curve. I personally feel that this time horizon is too long. So, you know, causation, correlation, it's a little bit difficult to predict. You know, the yield curve inversion supposedly even predicted COVID in 2020. So I think that's unlikely, of course. You know, but the U.S. economy moves in cycles. It does seem like we will have a few more months of, you know, positive equity returns, even if they are more volatile. And strong economic activity. We don't expect, you know, this yield curve inversion to be a full inversion and result in economic recession in 2023. The reason for that is we are seeing underlying resilience in the labor market. It just will take a little bit longer to clear that in the labor market, given COVID and all of the travel restrictions surrounding that are still in place. So you have fewer people per job opening, that inevitably is going to put upside pressure on wages, helping to offset inflation and the impact of hiking rates. And we also see confidence levels at very high, you know, the PMIs are still in their 60s compared to now negative in China. So that should hopefully help to offset any risk of a recession in the U.S. economy. But investors should not knee-jerk, because as I mentioned, even if we do see a recession, they tend to happen with a bit of a lag, and equity markets, in fact, peak before they, you know, come down from the peak during that recessionary period. So we are still looking at a positive equity return for 2022 at least, with you know, risks on the rise for 2023, which is something that everyone is recalibrating and considering at the moment.
Carlos, thanks very much for speaking to us this morning. That was Carlos Casanova, senior economist at UBP in Hong Kong, giving us his take on some of the trends that he sees moving markets, talking about the yield curve inversion that we saw earlier this week, saying that there's really no need to panic. There's still going to be a long lead time before any recession comes around, and there'll be many intervening factors in the interim.
Yeah, quite interesting points of view on the different speeds that China and America are growing at. He was saying that his forecast on the second quarter for China was 3%. I mean, remember back in the day when China was, you know, forecasting 12-13% GDP? Now at 3%, that's quite incredible. But no thanks to the zero COVID policy that they're pursuing. America PMIs are strong, labor market is strong. This whole recessionary fear, 1.5 years out, not maybe that's too far, but you know, it's nothing to get afraid about, lah. That's what they're saying.
Yeah, so looking at China, because it says like they're forecasting 5% GDP for the year, 3% for the quarter. But traditionally, from what I understand, Chinese government tend to under budget and overperform. So even though they put a lower 6%, usually they do, and they do 5.5, so they expect a little bit of a contraction here. But maybe they might be able to meet it. I don't know. But a lot of people are saying it's too ambitious, right?
Well, that's what Carlos was saying. He thinks a lot of the activity is going to come in the second half of the year, probably more stimulus to really ramp up growth at that time. He says, as he said, usually whatever the Chinese government predicts, it will come true by hook or by crook. They're going to make it happen. Yeah. So we're going to be on hand to watch as it unfolds. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.